This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
John Whitehead is the executive director and the founder of the Rutherford Institute, online at rutherford.org, and he joins us once a month to talk about civil liberties issues, and I appreciate you coming in. I know you've had quite a busy summer.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You've got a, now, for some folks may not know this, but the Rutherford Institute gets a slew of interns every summer, and you have all sorts of speakers that come in. And are you still in the middle of that, or is that sort of, are you at the end of that?
Well, we're coming to the end of it. We had about 30 speakers, from syndicated columnist Cal Thomas to constitutional expert Bruce Fine, who has helped draft the Constitution for Russia. He drafted the interim constitution for the Iraqi constitution. He's now drafting the Nigerian constitution. He spoke to our interns and a lot of attorneys, various people, the ACLU spoke, people for the American Way. We've had a lot of different groups in, and the students are from across the country, but quite a few, seven or eight this summer, are from the University of Virginia, really bright kids. And it's a really good class. It's a chance for students to come in and to hear about public service and the things that we do. When we take on a case, we defend it for free, and my emphasis is that we're here on earth to help people, and that usually means you're going to do it for free.
John, let me ask you, I don't know if we've ever talked about this in depth, but at the Rutherford Institute, y'all must just get emails and phone calls all day, every day, from people all across this country looking for help.
Right. It depends. You know, in a given day, we maybe get 20 emails. We get primarily emails now. We get a lot of calls. Letters, faxes, and just how to manage it right now. We're really overstaffed. It's a real good thing's happening. We have an attorney from Great Britain who's going to come over and work with us for a year, and he looks pretty sharp. He's done some work here in the United States, but he's asked if he'd come over and just intern with us for a year, but that's going to help. And
yeah.
So we have a lot of different people in and out of the office, but yeah, right now I would say we're the busiest as I've ever been in my life, what we're doing, because we tend now to do more in Virginia. We used to do more nationally, but we've been involved in the abusive traffic fees issue.
Yeah, and we'll certainly talk about that
now
today.
We're slowly getting into the surveillance camera. We have some views on that,
and
ways that should be handled. So we're in the thick of it here locally and statewide.
Has it gotten to the point now where you look at an email or you look at a letter and you sort of know, We're going to work on that. That's absolutely, we're going to work on that. Have you fine tuned your sense now of those cases where there's really not much debate anymore? You just absolutely know that's something we got to work on.
Yeah, there's some cases we handle here internally in Charlottesville, and then we have affiliate lawyers around the country who donate their time, and we try not to turn back anybody. We try to at least let them talk to an attorney in their state. We have people call us for divorce issues, and we don't do divorce and domestic issues. We do constitutional issues, but we try to, you know, people have a problem, we try to find them a lawyer. So we have a list of attorneys across Canada, even in Alaska.
Yeah.
And we refer them out to people. We can't help everybody in our office because we're not, you know, you just can't do everything, but we try to make sure that they have someone they can call and talk to. And sometimes all they need is a letter from a lawyer locally to win their issue.
Right. Now, back years ago when you found yourself at the center of a political storm when you were working on that case involving President Clinton, how did you get involved in that? Was it just an email from somebody that's saying, hey, can you help us out here?
That's coming up on 10 years, September. The French television just came in and did a long interview with me. They're doing a big special. The French really are into the Paul Jones Clinton issue still. So early September 1997, I woke up one morning and read the Washington Post, and it said Paul Jones didn't have a lawyer. I went into my office, and what I basically said, this looks fun. So I said, why don't you call her and see if she could use some help? And she was broke. And we talked and decided, and then I interviewed her, and I actually believed her story. And it wasn't difficult to believe her because I think she was telling the truth of what happened. She was sexually harassed, and so we decided to do the issue. That's how we got involved in that.
Yeah, and of course, a lot of people just who knew very little about it just assumed that you were out to get Clinton and that you were funded by some right-wing conspiracy and that you were really there to take down the president. And They didn't really know you, did they?
No, we didn't. We don't have any funding specific to that. In fact, we don't have large donors. Our funding primarily comes from people across the United States. Our average donation is about $20. I knew Bill Clinton in law school. I did the first political interview with him. I was a law student when he first ran for Congress. I ate dinner with Bill Clinton. I never have disliked Bill Clinton. To be honest with you folks, I think he's a better president than he was a better president than President Bush. So even when we were handling the case, I said he was a good president. He just had some problems, and I thought they could have settled that case, by the way, in the summer of 1997, and they decided not to. If they would have done that, you never would have heard of Monica Lewinsky, our involvement, or even Paul, you know, the Paul Jones. There never would have been all those books. He never would have been impeached, and they actually ended up settling for the same amount. 3 years later with us, the exact same amount.
My goodness.
And they could have done it.
Could have avoided all that stuff.
Avoided all of it.
John Whitehead is in studio. He's the founder and the director of the Rutherford Institute, online at rutherford.org. And you come bearing gifts today. We've got, thank you so much. I always love to give stuff away, and we want to let folks know if you're close to a phone, we got some free stuff here for you.
Yeah, I brought our pamphlet along. It's entitled, Do You Know the Bill of Rights? It's a small pamphlet you can read in about 5 minutes, but it gives you a breakdown of the first 10 amendments of the Constitution, why they're important, and I brought some of those along. I brought some pocket constitutions, which we pass out about 10,000 of those each year. In fact, we offered it to the local city police and the Albemarle police, and they took boxes full. So, you know, that's really laudable of our local police. And I brought some bumper stickers. My favorite thing, which is the Speak Truth to Power bumper sticker.
This is pretty sweet. I love this.
Yeah, it's the principle that it goes back to we the people and the Constitution. That's what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be telling the government when we don't like what they're doing, and that's speaking truth to power, and that's what we do.
Thomas Jefferson said that free government is not founded in confidence, it's founded in jealousy. And that if you ever find yourself confident of your government, wake up.
Oh, he also said, don't let me hear any more about this confidence in men. Let's bind them down with the chains of the Constitution. And so that's basically what I think what we're talking about.
So the phone lines are open at 977-1070. If you would like a Speak Truth to Power bumper sticker or a guide to the Bill of Rights, or the pocket constitution, your pick. Just call up and tell Matt which one you want, and he'll tell you how to get it. 977-1070. You recently wrote one of your commentaries, which folks can read online at rutherford.org, about Barry Bonds. Now, what attracted you to writing about that?
Well, it wasn't really about Barry Bonds, about Hank Aaron. As a, you know, modern baseball really bothers me with all the drugs and the money and the players riding to the park in limos. When I was a kid, I remember, and I recount this in my commentary on Hank Aaron, which has got a lot of nice people are sending me pennants now with 715 on it when Hank Aaron from different states. I'm getting all kinds of gifts because people really, really like Hank Aaron. If you remember Hank Aaron, he was a great man. He was humble. Came up through the old Negro leagues and almost didn't make the Milwaukee Braves. And he finally, somebody got hurt. And when he got in the game, that was it. From then on, he went crazy hitting home runs. But I tell the story when I was a young kid, my dad liked the Cardinals. We lived in Peoria, Illinois. We drove down to St. Louis one time, and there was the Cardinals were playing the Braves, and there was Hank Aaron in pregame practice with Eddie Matthews. And, Hank was a right-handed batter, and Eddie was left-handed, and they were taking batting practice, and they were hitting ball after ball over the fence. It just blew my mind. But that day, I walked out a Hank Aaron fan, and I was always a Hank Aaron fan. You know, and people forget that in 73, when he was getting close to breaking Babe Ruth's record of 714, he got all that racist hate mail. I can't recount some of that. He got death threats, and people were going to shoot him, and when he would hear a pop in the crowd, he would duck because he thought someone was trying to kill him.
Oh, gosh.
So incredible pressure from an incredible human being who you know, ended up hitting the 715 home runs in 74. But the amazing thing was when he came around and after the game, when he hit the 715 homer, what he said to the press was that the homer wouldn't have meant anything if we hadn't won the game. These guys today that play baseball are so arrogant most of the time. They walk out on press conferences. Hank Aaron didn't do any of that. He just went out and played the ball game. Thank God for what happened to him. Very humble. We just don't see that today. And so it was basically about Hank Aaron. I don't like what modern sports generally means with all the corruption and things that are going on. But
and why is it so corrupt? Is it because there's just so much more money in it now than there used to be? Because it's always been a big game, and it's always been a big business for its time, has it not?
Yeah, but, you know, people forget when Mickey Mantle won the Most Valuable Player, I think it was in 1956 for most runs, homers, and batting average, he didn't win it the next year and he got a pay cut and didn't complain. He did not complain. Today, you can imagine, they make so much money today, you know, I mean, that they don't, they're guaranteed contracts. And I think money corrupts. I don't think it's really a game anymore. It's not really a game in the sense it's big business. Everything is positioned. And but, you know, when Hank was going for the 715th homer, I mean, it was big news. Everybody was talking about it. How many people were really talking about the Barry Bonds record now? Not that much, because there's not that much enthusiasm. And so it's too bad we've lost it. It's really not long, it's no longer the national pastime.
Yeah.
Unfortunate. But I just like to remember the great heroes like Hank Aaron. When kids, I had a role model. That role model was humble. He worked hard. He didn't do drugs. You know, and he went out and played the game. And at the end of the game, remember he said, the homers don't mean anything if we don't win the game. That was what he was there for.
Yeah, he was a team player.
He was a team player.
He was out there to do his
and
best
he was a
for
winner.
The team.
His teams won championships and stuff. So
yeah. John Whitehead is the founder and the executive director at the Rutherford Institute, online at rutherford.org. Along that same lines, what are your thoughts about this allegations now that we've got an NBA referee who has ties to the mob and has been cooking games and you know, betting on games that he was calling? It's just a matter of time before this is a movie. It's an unbelievable story. But it, again, goes to your fact that these don't look to sports, modern-day sports, for your heroes anymore.
No, you really can't. I mean, in some instances, you can. Sometimes, though, I do think we damn people too quickly. I think maybe the referee is one. We got to wait and see if he's guilty. He's innocent until he's proven guilty. In the same way with Michael Vick. I mean, they're crucifying Michael Vick right now. He hasn't had a trial. I think we need to wait to see if they're going to have a trial. But I think you have the same kind of, I don't care attitude. I'm a big shot. And I think you see that in Michael Vick. Now, I like him. I think he's a great player. But, you know, pride does go before the fall sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. It's also interesting, too, because when you see something like this happen, all of a sudden you find the general public is very interested in the legal process. And they're talking about the legal process. You wish they weren't for the reasons that they are. But in a way, we see some type of a legal education taking place, perhaps for teenage kids who are Michael Vick fans. And they're learning for the first time, perhaps, about some of the specifics of the law.
Yeah, but when we teach the legal process, we have to remember he's not been proven guilty. He may not be guilty of this. It doesn't look good. It doesn't look good for the referee. But, people like Michael Vick, for now, he should just step down for the good of the team, in my opinion, and not play for a while. But we're quick to – I mean, I saw some minor league team now is damning him, baseball team or something is on his back. But everybody – what we do with these people is we pump them up. We make them these artificial – gods.
Larger than life, yeah.
And then some people like to see them fall. The media, I think the media in that point is really bad. They really enjoy seeing them fall. It makes news. And it's unfortunate. I hate to see how these people feel after, you know, the people that are affected like Vic and them. I feel for them, but they do bad things. They should have to pay the cost.
John Whitehead is the founder and the executive director at the Rutherford Institute, online at rutherford.org. You wrote recently about Alberto Gonzalez, George Bush's man at the Justice Department, and your thoughts.
Well, I think it's time for Alberto Gonzalez to go, as I say in my piece, because the Attorney General is supposed to be the people's lawyer. That's what he's called. And the main function of the Attorney General is to be sure that the rule of law prevails over government corruption. And so that means he's accountable to us, the people, and to Congress. But Gonzalez consistently, when he goes before Congress, will not answer questions. There's that in April 2007 regarding the questionable firings of those U.S. attorney generals, which has been all over the news. He said, "I don't recall. I have no recollection. I have no memory." 64 times. There was an Iraqi veteran in the audience. He was keeping another tally of some other event, but he decided to keep a tally of every time that Alberto Gonzalez said, "I don't recall." He was holding up a placard every time he did it. And there was one lady who jumped up, and they had to escort her out. She screamed out, "If you can't remember anything, how'd you get through law school?" So I think that's one thing that's really troublesome. If you and I did that, they'd haul us off to jail. You have to answer, especially if you're a public official. Remember, he's not elected. He's a bureaucrat. Now, recently released FBI documents indicate that Ghazali's probably lied under oath. He assured senators in April 2005 that the FBI had not abused its new terrorism fighting powers under the Patriot Act. And he says there's not any verified cases I know of. But now we find out that the FBI, days before that testimony, released files on how they had overstepped their authority and had violated the law. So he just refused to ante up. But I think that he has a consistent history of doing those kind of things. And if we're going to have confidence in our Constitution, we have to have confidence in the fellow who's supposed to be enforcing the law. Alberto Gonzalez, it's clear from everything that I've read, and I'm not the only one saying this. I have a lot of folks saying this now. Arlen Specter and the senator, many senators are now saying they don't believe he can really function properly because people have lost confidence because people don't believe him anymore.
Yeah.
He's essentially a yes man for the president, and he's not supposed to be. He really, in effect, works for us and should be enforcing the rule of law.
And, of course, what we're seeing Alberto Gonzalez do is no different from what we've seen from many of the people in this administration, including the president and the vice president.
Yeah, I had two speakers this summer that spoke to our interns. I talked to him privately. One who worked under the first President Bush, and another who had previously worked under the second President Bush. They both said the same thing, that George Bush tends to be very arrogant, and that's probably his biggest problem. And I think that he's not listening, obviously, to what the American people are saying. That's why he has one of the lowest ratings of any president. But I think, too, that as I look at Bush, I think he has bad advisors. I really do. I don't think Alberto Gonzalez is qualified to be advising the president. So I think it's time that we get someone that we really think is competent. And I think the process of selecting attorney general has got to change, too. I think maybe it needs to come from another source than the president. We need an independent functioning council because we need to hold our government accountable. If not, then inevitably you get the problems we see happening right now.
John Whitehead is the director at the Rutherford Institute. And the phone lines are opened at 977-1070. Gail is on line one. Gail, thanks for the call. You're on with John Whitehead. Go right ahead.
Hi. I just have a question, and I wanted to get Mr. Whitehead's opinion. And let me preface this by saying I'm no fan of Alberto Gonzalez either. But I had read several places that when Clinton came in that he fired a whole bunch of the attorneys as well. And there never was this hoopla about it. So if that's true, why is it that it wasn't made a deal of then? Is it just because of the denials now or because it's more in the media? Or what's your opinion on that?
Well, I think it's the way Gonzalez conducts business. He notoriously doesn't answer questions when congressmen. He just refuses to answer questions. He's just done it all along. The other thing about Gonzalez, you know, he was involved in all that what people conceived as misplaced allegiance to the president. He advocated the use of torture on captured detainees, and he insisted the president had absolute power, essentially an imperial presidency. I think that upset a lot of people in Congress. He's made a lot of enemies, let's put it that way. And now the chickens have come home to roost. And I've held off basically saying much about it, but this last report where he actually said there were no verified violations of the law, and the FBI had given him numerous documents days before, he just wasn't telling the truth. Or he's incompetent. Either way, he should go.
Yeah, either way, it's not good. But is it true, in fact, that Clinton had done that as
that
well?
I'm not aware of, no, I'll be honest with you.
I read a little bit on that, Gail, and I think the issue was that when a new president comes in, and a lot of those district attorneys are,
he was a new president? Yeah, usually presidents routinely change.
The president, right?
They're political appointees.
Right. Yeah, and a lot of them, usually, when there's a new president comes in, they'll resign.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what happened in that case. There were a whole slew of folks who recognized, we're moving from a Republican to a Democratic White House, let's go look for a job. It wasn't this kind of case where they had specifically pinpointed people as Gonzalez and Bush and Cheney had done.
Plus, Gonzalez is accused of covering up a mishandling or a scandalous situation with these attorneys. So,
okay. Well, just trying to clarify that because it does get confusing. It's a good question. And just for the 2 cents worth, I think one of the big problems that we're having in America now is that the founding fathers never envisioned, I don't believe, career politicians. I think they envisioned statesmen who would serve their country and then, you know, go back home. I mean, they had to beg some of them to serve because they didn't really want to or to do a second term. And if you're a statesman, you can do what's right for the country without trying to worry about if it's going to get you reelected. But if you're just making a career out of it, I think that's become a big problem.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't believe they envisioned that. They did not want that. And it's Cal Thomas, the syndicated columnist, spoke to our interns. And one of the things he said I thought was absolutely true. He says, and he knows this because he writes out of Washington, deals with politicians. He says, as soon as someone gets elected, it's like 3 or 4 days they start preparing for the next election. They start raising money for it. So they're not there serving us, a lot of these people. And that's why we need someone who, in the Attorney General's office and people who are there to make sure these people do their job. And I don't believe in career politicians. I think we need to revamp the system. I'm also opposed to lobbying, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody should be on Capitol Hill. Some people will say, well, what about the First Amendment? Well, the First Amendment says you have a right to petition your government for a redress of grievances, not for special favors, Jeff.
Right.
I think we need to really crack down on the lobbying because I think a lot of these people are basically polluted.
You're listening to WINA's Charlottesville Right Now, thanks to the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. If you want to get involved with the show, feel free to comment on our blog at sevillepodcast.com.
My guest this afternoon is John Whitehead, the founder and the executive director of the Rutherford Institute. It's online at rutherford.org. And by the way, y'all got a great website.
Thank you.
I mean, there is so much there that you could spend days just reading, and there's just so much there.
Plus, we have vodcasts. I mean, I do a weekly vodcast, which is me just sitting talking. You actually go up on the screen. We put it on YouTube.
Yeah, yeah.
It's designed to get information about the Bill of Rights and issues out to young people, and we do an audio cast, and that's all.
That's
weekly.
Great, and
daily postings. Yes.
Yeah, it's all there. Rutherford.org. And speaking of the Bill of Rights, now, real quick, I know that you're working on a book. We've talked about it before, but can you update us about your progress on the book?
Yeah, I finally got my act together and got a proposal, and I'll have a couple offers from publishers, and it'll be out probably next summer. It's on the Bill of Rights. It's basically a handbook for citizens to know what's happening, and hopefully it'll pose some alarm, and then they can – I want it to be small enough so you can put it under your arm and go to the city council meeting and make trouble.
There you go. I like the sound of that. Let's talk about these abusive driver fees in Virginia. Lots of folks are talking about them. We've got an online petition now that has over 140,000 signatures of folks who want to see the General Assembly repeal this. You have yourself, the Rutherford Institute, made news recently in a letter to the members of the Virginia General Assembly. What did you specifically say in that letter?
Well, we raised the big issue is the equal protection issue. Why are Virginia drivers fined thousands of dollars and someone from New York is fined $100? For example, if you're driving 46 miles an hour in Charlottesville in a 25-mile-an-hour zone, you're a Virginia person, the New York guy's right behind you, and you both pull the same day and get the same ticket, you go before the same judge. $1,250 is your fine, $200 is his. That obviously bothers people. And then, of course, there are a number of cases out here saying, they don't call them fines because it has to go in the literary fund to help schools. They want to go in the highway maintenance fund, they call them fees. But the number of cases are saying when states come up with this idea of fees, it has to have some rational relationship to the conduct you're supposedly controlling or helping. So the question would be, what does driving on an expired license do to stop potholes or create potholes? So it doesn't even fit in the scheme of being logical. So what we posed is there should be another way out of this. It's one would be just a small tax on gasoline would be a better way, or just call it what it is. I mean, we know it's a fine. And as one of the delegates that we talked to says, it's just a sneaky way to get around calling it a fine. It's a way to raise money. And
it's a tax on a fine, yeah, is what it ends up being.
And it's unpopular to call things a tax. But I guarantee if they had put a small tax on the gasoline, we wouldn't even be talking. People know there's nothing you can do about taxes. But like you say, that one fellow's got over 100,000 people that are upset with this. Our letter caused quite a stir across the state. It's helped generate some lawsuits. We have a couple people who have called us and now want to sue. And there's a rumor going around that there may be some kind of special session. The governor says that's not going to happen. But the point is, I mean, I want safe roads. But if a student comes here and lives 7 years and goes to undergraduate and law school 7 years, they're on the roads, they're creating the same problems and maybe more problems than Virginians. So why are they treated differently would be the question.
John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute is our guest, and the phone lines are open at 977-1070. Mark is on line one. Mark, you're on with John Whitehead. Go right ahead.
Mr. Whitehead, it's an honor to speak with you.
Thank you, sir.
I personally am outraged over this abusive driver thing, and the thing that bothers me the most about it, it's when you give the police a mandate or you make them de facto tax collectors. That's not what the police are meant for. And it's the potential for abuse of that is so great that, to me, that is the absolute worst. I mean, in my life, I know for example, right in Charlottesville, they had a rogue police officer before, which has caused a lot of trouble, and it caused some for me personally. And I don't, I'm just philosophically opposed to using the police to collect taxes. I'm disappointed in all the members of the General Assembly that voted this in. They absolutely were not looking out for the citizens, in my opinion.
Now, I think what they did, they made obviously a very transparent political move that's backfired. And constitutionally, it has problems. And I say it's not even logical what they're doing. So I think you're right. It's not the job of the police. And the police know that. I don't think the police want to be out here being tax collectors. And so it's a ruse. I mean, it's just exactly what it is. But I think what really bothers people is it falls so heavily on Virginians. And it's unfortunate. And like you say, I don't think the police want to be put in that position, but they've been put in that position.
Mark, thanks for the call. Hold on just a minute, Mark. And Matt's going to tell you how to get some things here that we have for you at the Rutherford Institute. Matt, he's on line one. If you could talk to Mark and make sure he knows how to pick these things up.
But anyway, there's a great article today in the Daily Progress on this particular issue. Michigan and New Jersey now trying to figure out how to get out of this mess.
Because they have these things, right?
Yeah, and the problem is it does fall heavily on a lot of poor people. And the upshot of the article was that there's a lot of people driving around with expired licenses now. They can't afford these fees. They're very, very expensive. And $3,000 is a lot of money for someone who makes
a minimum
wage. Yeah, some of these people probably don't even have credit cards that get caught. Now, again, it should be a fine that is appropriate for the conduct, obviously. And I think these fines, even if they apply them to all Virginians at this amount of money, I think that's too much.
Yeah,
to be honest with you, I think a policeman sitting on the side of the road where you can see them will slow traffic down. And there's a lot of ways that the police could – I think the police could correct this and maybe avoid some of the problems with people going too fast. So, there was no study. That was one of the things I asked one of the delegates that I talked to. I said, was there a study done on it? How to do – no, they didn't conduct a study. How do you have safer roads? Did they do a study on this?
Well, no. It was never done. The intention of this never had anything to do with safer roads. Let us not lose sight of the fact that the real reason for this is the fact that they were – it was a way of collecting money while at the same time avoiding anything resembling a tax. That was the whole point.
It was a political move.
Yes.
To be honest with you, no, our legislators should not be doing politics. They should represent us properly. We are the people who pay the taxes in Virginia, and we should be treated fairly like everybody else.
John Whitehead, the founder, the executive director of the Rutherford Institute. You can read more online at rutherford.org. It is always an honor, sir. Thanks so much for being here. Y'all have a great night.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.